Good afternoon and welcome to Unfiltered Finance with my co-host John D'Agostino and Ron Geffner. And I'd like to welcome Rachel Yucatel, who, while I've spoken to her and I've been on her podcast, I have this feeling of friendship or kinship with her. So welcome to our show, Rachel. We're very excited to have you today.
Thank you. It's an honor and a pleasure to be with both of you.
We will take that to heart. Anyway, so we have a lot of things in common, and I think I'll start with more of the macro because people are going to sit there and say, well, why are we here together? We all have Wikipedia pages. Doesn't really adequately or correctly describe us. Right. So to that end,
what a flex. Ron kicking off the pod with a subtle flex.
Features that
we all have Wikipedia pages. Okay.
That's the way to the muscle beach. But anyway, why don't you educate our audience as to who you really are?
Okay, well, that's a good question because I have a whole platform, which if people can't see, called Misunderstood behind me. Because I feel like I've spent most of my life being misunderstood. So I do get the question a lot, well, who really are you? And that's such a, you know, a open-ended, hard question to answer. I am a mother, I'm a podcast host, you know, but I'm someone who just, in a nutshell, I'm someone who was born in Anchorage, Alaska. I moved to New York City when I was five. I really am a New Yorker at heart, grew up in New York. You know, I have an A-type personality, so I always love learning new things, asking questions, being a part of things. You know, I have a college degree. I learned a bunch of different skills. I worked at Bloomberg News. My first like entrance into sort of not finding myself, but like having your life kind of stop in front of you was when I was younger. I was 15 and I was at boarding school and my headmaster told me that my father had died. That was like a real gut punch and kind of where your life like changes a little bit. And I went to boarding school when I was 12 and a half. I never lived at home after. I don't really get along with my mom. I had to grow up very fast. Fast forward to getting engaged when I was 20. I got into a relationship when I was 23. I got engaged when I was 26. And 2 weeks later, my fiance was killed in the World Trade Center. That was my second gut punch that kind of altered my life, where I had to grow up again. And, you know, because I really relied on this man as this 26-year-old girl at that point. He paid the rent. He, you know, we had a country home in Sands Point. He paid for the car. Like, I didn't know how to do anything. You know, I could basically pump gas and I didn't really know how to do that. I didn't know what side of the car it was on, you know. So it was, I put a lot of my financial you know, knowledge into him, and I didn't know anything about anything. So fast, and I worked at Bloomberg News, which was crazy, like a lot of finance stuff. I should have been more aware. And so the trajectory there also changed. I ended up moving to Las Vegas and running, you know, people call me, you know, a bottle host or a hostess or whatever. I was a director of VIP operations at the number one nightclub in the world. I was making, you know, in cash between $10,000 and $100,000 a week in this new business and figuring out what to do with it and how to manage it. And, you know, from there, my life has gone in all sorts of different directions. And now I would say, you know, I've been a Renaissance woman of sorts, learning new things, doing things. And currently I host a top 10 podcast called Misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel, where I interview people who have been reduced to a headline. They're on a mission to change their narrative. Or I talk about topics that should be reconsidered, or I think they should be reconsidered. And I have an expert on to go over the different aspects of them to hopefully change people's mind. So they start the show in one way, and at the end, they may not like the person or the topic, but they at least understand it a little better. So that should give you a little bit of an overview. I have a 13-year-old daughter, and I absolutely love animals and dogs probably more than I love people. So that's it.
So by the way, my youngest daughter says she prefers animals over people.
Yeah.
Not the first time I've heard it.
Yeah.
So you actually touch on a lot of different subjects that are highly relevant, even more so than people realize. As I've aged and I've gotten to know people better, I'm always surprised. I'm really not surprised, but I am a little. Many spouses who really have been removed from the financial situation. And I learned it through speaking to people who have gone through or are going through divorce, where mm-hmm. one spouse is completely in the financial know and one spouse is not. And I have a lot of thoughts on that subject. And it's something that really doesn't get enough attention and people don't pay enough attention to it until it's almost too late.
Right.
And then you're playing catch up.
And too late strings out to be decades for some women. Like, to talk about it from a woman's perspective, you know, many women stay in a divorce because in a marriage because they don't even know how they'll survive after. And not only that, they don't want to get a job or they don't know how to get a job after. And it's interesting because I just interviewed Allison Kosick. I don't know if you guys remember her. She was on CNN. She was on all sorts of financial news networks as the finance guru. She was on the floor of the NASDAQ, New York Stock Exchange, whatever the hell she was on the floor of, and reporting on finance. And she talks that she wrote a book just recently because she never knew anything about finances until she had to get a divorce and was so scared and stayed in a marriage for way too long because she didn't know what to do, even though she was reporting on finance. So it's crazy.
Rachel, what were those years like, those first years in Vegas? So you're coming off of this horrible situation. You don't know anything about money. Now you're in the thick of it. You've been getting paid tons of cash.
Yeah.
Not just getting paid well, but even worse, getting tons of cash. If you think back to how you acted in those early days, I'm guessing you weren't the most frugal with your money. Talk through like what that was like and what you learned from that time.
And what you might advise your younger self to do if you were able to speak to her.
Totally. Because I think about this all the time. I was making so much money. First of all, you think that you're going to make that kind of money forever, which I think is the issue that athletes have and why people don't understand when they're like, they were making like $50 million. How do they have no money? It's really easy to go through that money when you don't see an end in sight. And when you hand out money to family and friends and you pay for everything and you live extravagantly. The only thing that I was told is that do not deposit $10,000 or more in the bank. You can only deposit up to 9,000 or whatever it is, and then it flags you. So I would stick the cash under my bed. And then eventually I thought it was too much cash. So I went to the Range Rover dealership. I literally was like, I'll take that one, picked it out, paid in cash. I went and bought a Porsche. I bought a house. I paid the guy who designed Tao to design my home. I mean, I paid for everything. I was living really large. I didn't think about money. I didn't think about what it costs. I just lived, and I wasn't a snot about it. And I thought to myself, well, I'm not, you know, flying on private planes. I'm not doing like obnoxious things. I'm just living in a way that makes sense to me.
But you weren't saving. You weren't thinking about
saving. No, I wasn't
saving
at all. Okay. And by the way, it all disappeared because
I've heard there's really mattresses return about 3% a week right now is what I hear.
Yeah. So everything depreciates. There was what happened in 2008. Yeah, I ended up having to short sell that apartment. It was like a total nightmare and I had to start over again. So, years later, you know, and still people are like, well, how'd you lose all that money? Well, it didn't really matter to me. You know what I mean? I felt like it could come and go and I didn't feel the weight of it and feel like, oh, if I just put this much aside every week, I would have this much more. And you know, I've had people on my show recently that talk about the importance of really teaching your kids. I said, my daughter's 13, how important it is to have them put even a little bit aside every week. And in a year, a couple years, when they go to college, they'll have this extra stuff, but they don't live in a world where they realize that saving is a big deal. They don't realize that they're going to want it for really something important, not for Roblox cash, you know.
Rachel, do you think if you had a friend at that time, so you were like what, 24, 25 when you're in Vegas, is that about right?
Yeah.
If you had a friend who was like, hey, Rachel, I pulled you aside and said, look, you're making a ton of money. Like here, if you had a friend who tried to guide you, do you think you would have listened?
I mean, I would hope that I would be smart enough to listen, but I think when you're living like that, it's hard for you to see why it means so much. Unless, you know, listen, there were strippers coming to Vegas that they're studying in Kansas all week. They get on a flight, they're making so much money over the weekend and they go home and their lives are really about making a difference, buying a house. You know, there are people that are wired that way. There are people that are not. And I'm not a bad person. I just was never taught about money.
But it's also, look, everything in life really is perspective.
Yeah.
And this conversation as a parent, especially on both the East Coast and the West Coast on the seaboards, it's a consistent and uniform conversation that parents often say, our children don't know the value of money.
Right.
And they're, the people I've had this conversation with are living reasonably nice lifestyle. They're not private jets, but every few years they get a new car and they live in a nice house. And the children are unfortunately not exposed to the difficulties of actually earning a living. And maybe many of the parents themselves have never truly gone through that, depending on how many generations of what's perceived as wealth they come from.
Right.
And we are, as a society, trying to teach financial literacy. I sat in on, there was a back to school night, I sat in on one of my children's classes. The financial literacy course at the time, at least, was subpar. My children are all in their 20s and they're all thankfully gainfully employed. That's the first true wake-up lesson I'm finding in my children's lives, because some of us learn through listening, but the reality is most of us learn through working. So maybe the answer is, let's make our kids work a part-time job outside the house.
Rachel, would you want your daughter to work in the nightclub or service industry? You think the lessons there to be learned?
Oh, well, I definitely want her to work. I don't know if I would let her work in the service industry like that. I think that, you know, there's so many things that are dangerous that go on unless you have a good head on your shoulders. You can get wrapped up in all sorts of things that are way too dangerous now. Back when I was younger, it didn't feel as dangerous as it really is now, you know?
Yeah.
I just feel like it's interesting because you were saying something about how kids have to get a job or they have to understand it through experience. I think they also have to understand it through almost hitting rock bottom. Like, listen, I know what it's like at some point in your life. And this is kind of the beauty of living in New York. Like, you could live really high, you could live really low. And it's like part of the cool part about living in New York. I know what that is like to live in the shittiest apartment where you're walking up five floors, it's freezing, you don't want to go outside, you barely have enough money to take the train, you don't know what the next day is going to bring, and you're like hustling. That's a terrible place to be in. It's also a great place now as a 50-year-old woman that, listen, I have a 10-carat ring on my hand. I would think that's amazing. It's all like, I don't care. Like, I don't care about that stuff anymore. I know the value of money. It was great that this was how I was proposed to and all that. But like, I have now learned through having absolutely nothing, how nice it is to have things. But also, I won't go spend crazy amounts of money on things just because I may have it at that moment. I know that like, I'll weigh the things that I can like buy inexpensively and the things that I want to splurge on. Do you know what I mean? Like, but that's through living the ups and downs and knowing, okay, wait, now that I have money in my pocket, I know how to keep it there, but I know what to spend it on. And I know what really means something.
But so you mentioned about hitting rock bottom, and unfortunately, as humans, I think we learn the most about ourselves in great conflicts or trauma.
Yeah.
Through the trauma. But that said, I don't want my kids to hit rock bottom. And I assume you don't want your daughter to. So, or would you not? How would you like your daughter to learn that experience without potentially hitting rock bottom?
So I never had a safety net. It sounds like if your kids ever came home and said, Dad, I can't get a job. I hate my job. I don't know what to do. I got to move home. It sounds to me like you would say, okay, I got you. Or let me pay your rent for a little bit or come home. Am I correct?
It wouldn't be a complete safety net. I'd be like, look, and by the way, it's not if they, I've had that conversation. We have three children in the workforce, especially two of them being women. Mm-hmm. I do get to hear stories of feeling undervalued or cast aside. Mm-hmm. But it's more of the conversation, look, I have your back, but you can't quit without another job and you need to figure this out. And you have a safety net, but that doesn't entitle you to a certain level of convenience unless you're in such an intolerable position that I can't accept that either.
Yeah. So to answer your question, I was never given a safety net and it was a terrible way to grow up because it was very fearful. Sometimes I probably did things that I shouldn't have done to figure out life. And I would never want that to happen to her. Now, I feel like I've learned so much. Like, I didn't pick a college based, I picked a college based on the guy I was dating. Okay. So now, and I was a really smart girl at the time. I could have gotten in anywhere. And I wish when she's ready to go to college, I don't care what she says, I will explain to her the people that you know later in life sometimes are the contacts you made in college. You don't even realize it now, but these are going to be the smart people that you want a job with or that you need to connect with. And nobody told me that. Nobody told me how important it was to, you know, to pay attention in certain situations. Like, I didn't have any of that. So for her, I will help guide her and help her make decisions because I know best, you know, or I know better than having no help. But I do think she'll have to fail a little. It's not like I'm ever going to let her be homeless.
Rachel, you've got, I mean, I don't know you, but I've read about you. I know what people think about you, and the perception is you're very savvy for a couple of reasons. One is you've turned trauma and tragedy into a successful. I think if I map the tabloid fodder Rachel that I first ran into decades ago versus where you are now, you've navigated this very, very well. You just have. I may have your own issues, whatever, whatnot, but I think outside looking in, you've managed it. A lot of people who had that happen to them, and maybe that's why you're in a position to advise people. I want to go back just because I feel like I learned so many lessons from the nightclub scene in New York City. I learned lessons about psychology, about money. Interestingly, I was the consumer until I started investing. I was the asshole buying bottles, you know, when I got my first hedge fund job in my 20s. Mm-hmm. And I hated being that product. I hated being the sucker. So I started flipping over to the investor side and learning just so much about money and psychology and the way men interact. Do you think that experience made you more savvy?
Oh, 100%. Sorry. When you asked me earlier if I would let my daughter do it, I just wouldn't let her do it because she's a girl. I learned who I am is probably because of those jobs that I had moving to Vegas, opening up Tao, being there for 5 years, coming back, opening up probably 7 or 8 places in New York, being in St. Bart's, opening up places. I know so much about men. I know so much about behavior. I know about women, you know, like it's the interaction that goes on between the two, the dance that happens, you know, between where people don't even get this from the moment that somebody shows up at the door to all the things happening, to placing men next to certain parties, you know, to make them spend more, to have certain music come on to make them spend more, to make sure your barbacks know that if Prince comes in and loves, you know, McDonald's French fries, you go and you get 100 things of French fries and you bring every, you know, bachelorette party up to the area that he's in. Like, you know, you just know these things that go along with making people spend money. And that's what I was really good at. I was good at negotiating, getting people to spend more, making sure they were okay. But I also really did it from a male mindset, I want to say. Maybe I shouldn't even say male, but like I was a woman.
No, it's real.
No, it's a perceived male mindset.
Yeah.
And by the way, I skipped that entire phase because I got married at 26. Mm. But I've had to learn it through the practice of representing people in finance as a lawyer and getting all the different permutations of personality. It's, you know, human psychology is a learning curve and it's very valuable in any job you have.
Right. But I just want to say that it's interesting because women in that industry especially use their sexuality to upsell the bottle or to run things there. That wasn't my job. You know, my job was to make sure I was the wingman. I was the gatekeeper. So I was this like, you know, fun, hot chick running around. But I was a guy. I was like, I know your mistress. I know your wife. I know how to tell you which one you're with in case you forget. I know how to sign your bill for you. I know how to make you get home at night. And I don't care one way or the other, as long as you're safe. I'm your buddy. And so, I learned that I got a lot more out of that, more friendships. I felt better about myself. And I would always say to the waitresses, do not sleep with these guys. You will ruin your entire relationship. They didn't get it because they thought selling themselves would do better for them. So although I got placed in this basket of like hostess girls and I slept with everybody, I really didn't.
Yeah.
And I didn't need to, you know?
Most didn't. Most at your level. I remember that. And so, Rachel, I want you to respond or react to my go-to move back then. As I mentioned, I used to hate being the sucker. And so after I bought a few massive nights, I just was like, I don't want to be that guy. Right. And so my go-to move, and I did this at Tao in Vegas, because I used to work for a hedge fund that they would take me out to Tao. I'd ask to speak to the manager, so it'd be you or whoever. And I'd say, hey, my name's John. Here's what we're going to do tonight. Your shots are like, what, 20, 30 apiece. You're going to sell me 100, but you're not going to charge me 20. You're going to charge me like $2 each. And I'll tip out. I'll be fine. But here's what's going to happen. You're going to bring them over. You're going to give them to everybody around me, everyone. You're going to pass out 500 shots to everyone around me. The DJ is going to stop, going to shine the spotlight on my table and say, Mr. D'Agostino just bought the club shots. And the reason you'll do this is you will sell more shots tonight at full price than you've ever sold in your life. Because every asshole around me is going to want to be me because he thinks I just spent 10, 15, 20 grand on shots. And I did this in Dubai. I've done this in years ago. And without fail, that was the biggest night of that club's year on shots. Because the psychology to me was so obvious, because I was that guy. If I saw somebody doing that, I had to outcompete them. And it started to become just like, you could just predict the behavior by the crowd in the room.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. And everybody wants to be the biggest whale in the room. Everyone wants, right. If someone has sparklers, someone else is going to want to have sparklers. I didn't know that you did that. I actually haven't even heard of that. If you ever came up to me and said, I want to make a big deal. I want people to think, well, first of all, I would think that you only would want to do that if you are like an owner in the place, because you would want the place to do well. For you, it might just give you some attention. So guys would come to me and be like, how do I get the most girls to come over here? How do I, you know, I can only, you know, I've got a $10,000 budget for my hedge fund, whatever, and I'm taking these guys out. How can we do it so I'm like the man? Yep. And I'd be like, sure. I got you. If I liked you, if I thought you were a dick, I'd be like, so spend your money. I can't do anything to help you, you know? Yeah. But for the most part, I love that. And I love to see them be that guy for that night. Like, that was really fun for me. So, I mean, I could be here for hours telling you stories of things that we did to create fun movements for men so that they were having the best night of their lives. But I will tell you organically, when I was there, people were spending $450,000 because of the psychology of they saw the attention they got. That's when all of a sudden it was like they were making it rain with dollars. All of a sudden they were buying a shot for the table. Then they're like, they saw the DJ say something. And then they're like, okay, wait, I want to do it again for that table. That's forget it, the whole club. And then we were having a go-go dancing party. I'll never forget. And I said to the guy, or he was talking about it, the girls or something. And he said, how can I be a judge on that for them? And I said, if you want to buy a bottle for every table in the, there's like 52 tables. If you want to buy 52 bottles, you could be a judge. I was kidding. And he did it. It was crazy. So, you know, you just got, this was also a long time ago when people spent a lot more money. I think people are more frugal now, but who knows? I don't go in.
Bottle service is dying. That whole thing that you've just described, Gen Z, they drink 20% less alcohol. And they're less prone to that conspicuous consumption. So the men in Gen Z are not responding as well to those sort of tricks, for lack of a better word. So something's changed there.
Right.
On another subject, one of the things we are seeing is sharing of financial guidance on podcasts, on social media like TikTok.
Oh, yeah.
Younger people are being influenced. What trends are you seeing by virtue of, you know, your podcast and social media? Because you've either been a party to it or involved in it.
Well, I mean, I think the biggest trends are that people are getting their information from TikTok or wherever, and there's no facts or basis for what people are talking about, whether it's medical, financial, you know, anything. And that's really scary. And the younger you are and the less like experienced you are with reality, you don't know how to see those markers and know when you have to like make sure you're listening to all the facts. And that's to me what's scary about it. I would never take advice from some financial or medical or even someone talking about politics. Because listen, I was involved as somebody that everyone liked to comment about in the news, and I saw how wrong it is. To this day, you know, every once in a while, a couple of days ago, a news article came out about me. I was like, how is half of this stuff written? It's not even accurate. There was all these posts about the fact that I got engaged in everything from like Newsweek to, you know, Page Six or whatever. They did sections on who is Dan Donovan, the person I got engaged to. They named all sorts of companies he worked with and a job title he didn't have. And I'm like, what's wrong with people? No one even knows the facts anymore. So, well, I mean, my advice would obviously be you never take advice from anybody besides your financial advisor or somebody you really trust.
By the way, there was a news article to that effect that social media, might've been TikTok, was reporting that dementia. Sorry, I did not intentionally pause. That was legit. That really didn't, but that dementia can be cured or minimized through diet. And there was something I read in the Times saying how that doctors are claiming that's an inaccurate statement, mm-hmm. which, so I don't think it's just limited to the young, because I don't know of any 10 or 20 year olds that's worried about dementia or Alzheimer's, actually, is what the article.
Richard, how do you recommend to people, so you coach people on this and you've navigated it well, how do you recommend people respond to those inaccuracies? Because it's like a fire hose coming at you if you're in the media spotlight.
Well, I get so like annoyed by it. I mean, you're right. It's adults too. It's funny you bring that up. I had a text message from a father of a girl at my daughter's school saying, oh, I heard one of your podcasts. And, you know, I've now heard that doctors say that if you take Ozempic, it'll help your chances of not getting Alzheimer's. Can I get in touch with the person you were talking to? And I was like, okay, I don't know that that's true or not. We didn't even talk about that. And you probably shouldn't get that from, like, you know, your Channel 9 news team. You know, you should figure that out more. But anyway, the way I would respond to stuff like that is like, let's use some common sense, be smart, be worldly. Listen, there are people that listen to CNN. There are people that listen to Fox. I listen to everything. And then I try to be really smart about what reality is. And so I always say, you know, make sure you know the facts about everything before you comment or do anything. But not only that, when you're reading anything in the news, if it's about a person or a situation, you really should read it and not comment thinking that that is the accurate facts. Like, it could be the subject that is accurate, but like anything that went into it, you have to be like, well, I don't know the person, so I don't really know the story, you know?
Rachel, so many kids today want to be, I think the most common, if you ask kids under 15 or 18 what they want to be when they grow up, the most common answer is influencer.
Yeah.
What do you think about it? If your daughter came to you and said, Mom, I just want to be internet famous and figure out a way to monetize it, given what you've gone through, but also given what you're pursuing, how do you balance the good and the bad? What's your advice in that situation to your daughter?
Well, I think being an influencer is not what it was. I mean, I've definitely talked to a lot of people that are like, I do not make the money that everybody says that we make. And these are some of the biggest influencers out there. And also their life is constantly about head down in the phone about the content, and they're like missing life around them. So I really raised my daughter Wyatt to like, even though she's obsessed with her phone and everything that goes with it.
They all are.
All of a sudden she's like, I'm going to, you know, be an influencer, I'd be like, no. But if she was like, oh, I'm going to go be an executive at Roblox because she wants to work, I'd be like, okay, well, that's a cooler job, because I don't believe the whole influencer thing is going to stay around a lot. I think it's great that money is being given to anyone who can present a product as opposed to just becoming a famous actress and then getting money, you know, in the advertising business. I think it's fascinating, but I don't think that's a job that will last from when somebody is 20 to 55 or 65, whenever you're supposed to be able to retire in the world. And I think you have to learn a trade or have a job of some sort, is my personal opinion.
Yeah, although it's getting more difficult. There's articles, and I know, John, you have some knowledge on this too, with AI. And I read an article that AI is more negatively affecting college grads than those people who have not gone the college path, and that their income is actually going to be reduced in the long run.
Meaning because they won't study as much and they'll just use...
No, I don't think it's a study as much thing. I think it's what you're studying for might be replaced by AI, especially entry level, as opposed to a more, as I understood it, a more service-oriented skill. If I'm a mechanic, AI most likely, unless I don't see it in the near future replacing me, Although with auto drive, autonomous driving cars, I do remember a decade ago running into a guy who repairs automobiles saying there's going to be fewer and fewer bumps, you know, car accidents with autonomous driving vehicles.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the influencers are nervous because we now already can generate through AI photorealistic and video realistic people. They speak the way we're speaking. This could be AI.
Right.
In fact, I think the next trillion-dollar company is going to be whoever figures out how to conclusively prove that this is not actually AI. So human identity verification is a big deal right now because we're already there. Google just released a new version 3 days ago that, you know, it's expensive and the rendering is tough and blah, 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 and takes a lot of power, blah, yada, yada, yada. We are there now where someone can create a 23-year-old good-looking man or woman, have them say whatever they want, direct them to sell whatever product they want. And that's just the reality. So, if you deliver yourself over a digital mechanism, you can be replaced.
Now, we actually had a guest on that. One of John's.
That's fascinating. But by the way, those are great. So I would say all of that stuff is interesting. Go get a job in that kind of field because that is fascinating.
Well, I mean, you're a survivor. So it's great that that's the kind of, it seems like I talk about with my daughter about having sort of a reptilian sense of survival. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we all want to live this wonderful life, but there are going to be times you have to scrap and scrape. And it sounds like you've been there a couple of times you've just pulled yourself out and now you're in this wonderful, wonderful place.
But also what I tell people too, is when you're in that place, don't think of it as like, oh my God, how am I going to get out of this? This is so terrible. Like, live in it. Be okay with it for a second because the climb out of it is a lesson. Like, if I didn't learn how to completely fall and how to get back up, like, I wouldn't know how to function in life. And I feel like, I talk about this a lot. I love the concept of, remember Karate Kid?
Yeah.
And he did the wax on, wax off, and up and down.
Mr. Miyagi.
Yeah, he's like, why the hell am I doing this? And then he gets to this meet and all of a sudden he's up, down, side, side, and he knows how to fight and he didn't know that. I feel like I've lived my life like that. I didn't know why I was doing things, what I was doing them for. I have every skill possible. You could drop me naked in Ghana in a box with a dollar. I will come back to America with $1 million and a full set of clothes knowing how to do it on my own because I have learned how to do those skills. You know what I'm saying?
So Rachel, about 10 years ago, there was this whole fad in child rearing called Give Them Grit. There were books written about exactly what you're talking about. It's just, and the thing was like, we should put obstacles in their way. Cause as you started off the conversation, if they grow up too soft, they don't have that ability to survive and scramble. Yeah. It's tough. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. Like, especially as a dad to two little girls, I know that's right. Every fiber of my being is screaming to protect them and make their life easier. And I struggle with that all the time.
I was saying I totally understand that. And I struggle with that too. I would never want that for my child. I didn't grow up with a dad though. So it was, nobody protected me. I bet you had I been protected though by a male figure, none of that stuff would have happened. I'm happy that I've learned those skills now. I would never want to go through it again. So.
But look, we're all Miyagi-ing our kids.
Yeah.
You're doing with your daughter, John's doing with his two daughters, right? Your daughter's got a YouTube channel, John. If you were not her father, she wouldn't. It's pretty clear. I've Miyagi'd my kids. And how you go about Miyagi-ing them evolves as they age. That's where I have a little bit of a different experience with my children in their 20s. When they're applying for jobs and not getting them, it was almost like, don't cry, toughen up. This is part of being an adult. And you will have those opportunities. I don't think I did them when my children were younger, except when it came to organized sports. Mm-hmm. And I had to explain to them different perspectives on my perspective with regard to that.
Yeah.
So you're still in the early innings of raising children.
Yeah.
And you have that opportunity as they get a little older.
Yeah. But it is hard to watch. You know, my daughter loves volleyball and she just went for a tryout on Tuesday with a group of girls that they've been playing all year together. She was, you know, they were bringing her up a level and trying her out. I literally had a migraine within 5 minutes watching the interaction of all these girls and her not knowing anyone. And are they going to be nice to her? Or are they going to be mean? Is she going to be nervous? To watch your kid go through that is really tough. And I physically got sick from it, which was weird, you know? So I definitely know what you mean, John.
You're insane. All right. So I know we only have 5 minutes left because Rachel has to be a good mom and go pick her daughter up.
You know what? Make her walk. This is the first day. Tell her she's got to walk home.
Yeah.
So Ron, I want to try something new if you don't mind. And I'm sorry.
Just to say one thing. I'm very tough on my daughter. I usually say to her, when I was younger, I had to walk 6 miles to work. She knows I'm full of shit.
But you were walking to Town Nightclub where you made $100,000 a night. So, I mean, let's be fair, right?
Right. She's Rachel, like, okay, Mom.
I'd like to end with this. Kind of a weird question, but I heard it from someone I really respected a long time ago. And I've always wanted to ask it to somebody interesting with interesting life perspective. Snap my fingers. You rule the world. You are the ruler of the world. You can do anything you want. What's the first rule you make?
Like I can make a new rule?
Yeah. You're the ruler of the world. Everybody has to do what you say. What's the first thing you do?
Oh my God. I would have to think about an answer to this.
I know it's a tough one.
What are some ones that people have answered?
I know one.
What?
My first one's no violence.
Rachel, you think. Ron, you go.
Okay.
No violence.
Okay. What? None at all.
None at all.
Okay.
I'd like to do that now. Have every country beat up the other country that attacked another country.
Well, that would be violence though. So no more... No more violence.
Well, you're saying I have to enforce it.
Okay.
Wait, Ron, have you seen the movie The Purge where it's no violence all year and then it's violence?
Yes. Builds up.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'll give you mine and you give me yours. Okay. So I would say kids are not allowed to use social media until the age of 18.
Okay. That's a good one. I would say something like that, or I would actually say that, okay, this is a weird one. I would say that people that are in prison are the ones that should go to the wars that people never want to go to. And if they live through it and prove themselves, they can come back depending on what they did and they can be out of their sentence.
So your name is Putin is what you're telling me, right?
I'm
pretty sure that's what Putin did.
Yeah, but he's doing it in a bad way.
A good way. These are people
he's not giving them weapons. He's using them as like basically just
meat. Sorry, is that a Russian thing? Right. Okay. Here's another one.
Please.
Any dog, maybe edit that out. Any dog on a euthanasia list, maybe something again with prisons, like you have to put them into a prison system and they get rehabilitated with people they're trying to rehabilitate I don't know, something with animals. I don't like hearing that anything happens with the animals that sit in these cages forever. It's terrible. Oh, I know. It would be illegal to eat horse and dogs, and anyone that abused an animal had to be killed in that same way. That's what I would do.
Okay.
Ooh.
We'll use the last one.
Yeah.
Michael Vick is not going to like that response.
Rachel,
I know we're at time, and I want to make sure you get to your daughter on time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate you guys.
Always a pleasure to see you.
Always a pleasure.
I always enjoy your energy.
Thank you.
And good luck on your wedding.
Thank you so much.
Congrats again.
Thank you.
Cheers. Take care, Rachel.
Take care.